And moving now to news from the nation and world, we begin with an article from page 16 of today's newspaper. It's titled, First Jurors Seated in Trump Criminal Trial. Choosing a jury could take days, proceedings expected to last weeks. This article, written by Associated Press writers Michael R. Sisick, Jennifer Peltz, Jake Offenhartz, and Alana Durkin-Ricker. It's datelined New York. The first seven jurors for Donald Trump's hush money trial were seated yesterday after lawyers grilled the jury pool about their social media posts, political views, and personal lives to decide who can sit in fair judgment of the former president. The jurors include an English teacher, an oncology nurse, and a corporate lawyer. 11 more people still need to be selected before opening statements begin in the Manhattan case accusing the Republican of falsifying business records to cover up a sex scandal during his 2016 campaign. On the second day of jury selection, New Yorkers were quizzed for hours about their views on Trump and other issues, and 8 were excused after saying they could not be impartial or because they had other commitments. Trump's lawyers challenged a handful of people over social media posts, and one person was dismissed over a 2017 post about Trump that said, "Lock him up." Several would-be jurors told the judge they believed they could decide in a fair case fairly, no matter their feelings about Trump or his policies as president. The methodical process could take several more days or even weeks. The trial expected to last for 6 weeks or more. The trial, which began Monday, puts Trump's legal problems at the center of his closely contested race against President Joe Biden. It's the first of Trump's 4 criminal cases to go to trial, and it may be the only one to reach a verdict before voters decide in November whether to elect the presumptive GOP presidential nominee. Trump looked on in the courtroom as his lawyers urged the judge to remove one potential juror for his social media post she made after his 2020 election loss. Trump at one point spoke loudly and gestured while the judge questioned the woman, causing the judge to admonish the former president. "I don't know what he was uttering, but it was audible, and he was gesturing, and he was speaking in the direction of the juror," Judge Juan Muchan said. "I won't tolerate that. I will not tolerate any jurors being intimidated in this courtroom." Prosecutor Joshua Steinglass took Trump's notoriety head-on, telling would-be jurors that attorneys were not looking for people who had been living under a rock for the last 8 years. They just needed to keep an open mind. "This case has nothing to do with your personal politics. It's not a referendum on the Trump presidency or a popularity contest or who you're going to vote for in November. We don't care. This case is about whether this man broke the law," he said. Trump pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records as part of an alleged effort to keep salacious stories about his sex life from emerging during his 2016 campaign. With the trial expected to last for 6 weeks or more, multiple jury pool members brought up plans they have for Memorial Day and beyond. One parent was excused Monday because of a child's wedding in late June. Another person was dismissed Tuesday because of a trip they had planned. One man was excused after saying he feared his ability to be impartial could be compromised by unconscious bias from growing up in Texas and working in finance with people who intellectually tend to slant Republican. "I'm not sure that I can say beyond a reasonable doubt that I can be fair," another potential juror told the judge. "I can try, but I'm not 100% sure I can be fair." She was also dismissed. One woman who said she disagrees with Trump's policies and sometimes finds herself frustrated by him pledged to be fair and impartial, telling defense lawyer Todd Blanche that she would give her level-headed best if she were picked for the jury. "I didn't sleep last night thinking about, could I do that," she said. After another juror said she would be unable to serve impartially, Trump twisted in his chair, looking in the direction of the box. Trump broke into a grin, nodding his head in an exaggerated manner when another person said he had read two of the former president's books, The Art of the Deal and How to Get Rich. The man, who said some of his wife's family members are lobbyists for the Republican Party, said he didn't think there was anything that would prevent him from looking at the case fairly. "I feel that no one's above the law," he said. The charges center on $130,000 in payments that Trump's company made to his then-lawyer, Michael Cohen. He paid the sum on Trump's behalf to keep porn actor Stormy Daniels from going public with her claims of sexual encounter with Trump a decade earlier. Trump denies the encounter ever happened. The story from page 16 of today's Richmond Times-Dispatch. First jurors seated in Trump criminal trial. Choosing a jury could take days, proceedings expected to last weeks. This Associated Press story written by Michael R. Sysak, Jennifer Peltz, Jake Offenhartz, and Alana Durkin-Recker. Simon?
The next story from the Nation World page, Johnson pushes for foreign aid. Facing resistance in his party, GOP speaker will need Democrat support. This story written by Lisa Mascaro of the Associated Press. Dateline Washington. House Speaker Mike Johnson pushed back Tuesday against mounting Republican anger over his proposed U.S. aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and other allies, and rejected a call to step aside or risk a vote to oust him from office. "I am not resigning," Johnson, Republican Louisiana, said after a testy morning meeting of fellow House Republicans at the Capitol. Johnson referred to himself as a wartime speaker of the House and indicated in his strongest self-defense yet he would press forward with a U.S. national security aid package, a situation that would force him to rely on Democrats to help pass it over objections from his weakened majority. "We are simply here trying to do our jobs," Johnson said, calling the motion to oust him absurd and not helpful. Tuesday brought a definitive shift in tone from both the House Republicans and the Speaker himself at a pivotal moment as the embattled leader tries, against the wishes of his majority, to marshal the votes needed to send the stalled national security aid for Israel, Ukraine, and other overseas allies to passage. Johnson appeared emboldened by his meeting last week at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, when the Republican former president threw him a political lifeline with a nod of support. At his own news conference on Tuesday, Johnson spoke of the importance of ensuring Trump is reelected to the White House. Johnson also spoke over the weekend with President Joe Biden, as well as other congressional leaders, about the emerging U.S. aid package, which the speaker plans to move in separate votes for each section, with bills for Ukraine, Israel, the Indo-Pacific region. The Speaker is considering a complicated approach that would break apart the Senate's $95 billion aid package for separate votes. All told, it would require the Speaker to cobble together bipartisan majorities with different factions. That story from page 16 was written by Lisa Mascaro of the Associated Press and headline, Johnson pushes for foreign aid. Emmett?
The next story is from page 17 of today's newspaper. National Recording Registry adds artists. The story written by Associated Press writer Andrew Dalton. It's datelined Los Angeles. ABBA, Biggie, Blondie, and Rudolph are entering America's audio canon. New inductees into the National Recording Registry at the Library of Congress include ABBA's 1976 album, Arrival, the Notorious Big's 1994 album, Ready to Die, Blondie's 1978 breakthrough, Parallel Lines, and Gene Autry's 1949 version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Library of Congress Carla Hayden announced... Librarian of Congress Carla Hayden announced the 25 new titles in the class of 2024 on Tuesday, saying in a statement they are worthy of preservation for all time based on their cultural, historical, or aesthetic importance in the nation's recorded sound heritage. Puerto Rican singer Hector Lavoe's signature song, 1978's El Cantante, written by Ruben Blades, will enter the registry along with Mexican singer Juan Gabriel's tribute to his mother, Amor Eterno. The library will enshrine a 1990 recording of the song first released in 1984. Other titles deemed to be among the defining sound of the nation's history and culture are Jefferson Airplane's 1967 album Surrealistic Pillow, Green Day's 1994 album Dookie, and The Chicks' 1998 Wide Open Spaces. Lily Tomlin's 1971 album of sketches, This Is a Recording, is the only comedy and the only non-musical recording on this year's list. Autry, the singing cowboy, who was among America's biggest stars in the mid-20th century, recorded the definitive version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Last year, a newer holiday perennial, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, joined the registry, which now has 650 titles. Arrival was the disco-tinged fourth album from the Swedish supergroup ABBA and included their hits Dancing Queen, Money, 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 and Fernando. Blondie and singer Deborah Harry had their commercial breakthrough with Parallel Lines, an album with a famous striped black-and-white cover that featured Heart of Glass. It's joined this year by another new wave classic from the same year, the self-titled debut album by The Cars. The Notorious B.I.G.'s 1994 album, Ready to Die, featured Juicy and Big Papa, the only album released during his life, headlines hip-hop entries that also include La-Di Da-Di, Dougie Fresh, and Slick Rick's 1985 single. Rocket 88 by Jackie Brenston and his Delta Cats, the 1951 single that some argue was the first rock and roll song, is also on the list. Career-defining singles from several canonical artists also will enter the registry, including Chances Are from Johnny Mathis, Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin, The Tennessee Waltz from Patti Page, and Ain't No Sunshine from Bill Withers. This story from page A17 of today's Richmond Times-Dispatch, National Recording Registry adds artists. It was written by Associated Press journalist Andrew Dalton.
Thank you, Emmett. Also from page A17, a story by Edithi Ramakrishnan of the Associated Press, titled, Your Coffee May Be More Than a Million Years Old. That coffee you sipped or slurped this morning, it's 600,000 years old. Using genes from coffee plants around the world, researchers built a family tree for the world's most popular type of coffee, known to scientists as Coffea arabica, and to coffee lovers simply known as Arabica. The researchers, hoping to learn more about the plants to better protect them from pests and climate change, found that the species emerged around 600,000 years ago through natural crossbreeding of two other coffee species. In other words, prior to any intervention from man, said Victor Albert, a biologist at the University of Buffalo, who co-led the study. These wild coffee plants originated in Ethiopia, but are thought to have been first roasted and brewed primarily in Yemen, starting in the 1400s. In the 1600s, Indian monk Baba Budan is fabled to have smuggled 7 raw coffee beans back to his homeland from Yemen, laying the foundation for coffee's global takeover. Arabica coffee, prized for its smooth and relatively sweet flavor, now makes up 60-70% of the global coffee market and is brewed by brands such as Starbucks, Tim Hortons, and Dunkin'. The rest is Robusta, a stronger and more bitter coffee made from one of Arabica's parents, Coffea canephora. To piece together Arabica's coffee's past, researchers studied genomes of C. canephora, another parent called Coffea eugeniodes, and more than 30 Arabica plants, including a sample from the 1700s, courtesy of the Natural History Museum in London, that Swedish naturalist Carl Linnaeus used to name the plant. The study was published Monday in the journal Nature Genetics. Researchers from Nestle, which owns several coffee brands, contributed to the study. The Arabica plant's population fluctuated over thousands of years before humans began cultivating it, flourishing during warm, wet periods and suffering through dry ones. These lean times created so-called population bottlenecks when only a small number of genetically similar plants survived. Today, that renders Arabica coffee plants more vulnerable to diseases like coffee leaf rust, which causes billions of dollars in losses every year. The researchers explored the makeup of one Arabica variety that is resistant to coffee leaf rust, highlighting sections of its genetic code that could help prevent or protect the plant. The study clarifies how Arabica came to be and spotlights clues that could help safeguard the crop, said Fabian Echeverria, an advisor for the Center for Coffee Research and Education at Texas A&M University, who was not involved with the research. Exploring Arabica's past and present could yield insight into keeping coffee plants healthy and coffee cups full for future early mornings. That story from page 17 was written by Edithi Ramakrishnan of the Associated Press and was headlined, "Your Coffee May Be More Than a Million Years Old."
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a moment with today's birthdays, followed by opinions, letters to the editor, and more news as time allows.